From KQED and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly roundup of California politics from the state capitol in Sacramento.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Capitol Notes podcast for this week ending November 16th. I'm John Myers from KQED and the California Report. Filing this podcast down from the Central Coast, where I've come down at the end of the week for a speaking engagement. So no journalist roundtable for this week, and something a little different this week on the Capitol Notes podcast. Gray Davis, the 37th governor of California, who was in Sacramento this week speaking to the Sacramento Press Club. And I thought I'd bring you some of his comments and some of his Q&A with members of the press and others in the audience. Davis, as you know, of course, left office quite unusually, certainly before he thought he was going to, serving only about a year of his second term, being recalled by voters, and of course, as we know, Arnold Schwarzenegger being installed as governor. Davis has not been in the public eye a lot in the time since he's been gone, but he does still stay plugged into politics, and clearly, even as he talks about in this speech to the press club, clearly is still dialed into Democrats around the state and offers advice when he can, and generally knows what's going on and has an opinion about all of it. Of course, about 30 years in California politics, that would seem pretty reasonable that he would still be somewhat dialed in. But I think most of the people in the audience, you know, really came away from Gray Davis's appearance at the Sacramento Press Club impressed and interested. I think that Davis certainly comes across as thoughtful, as honest these days. He's no longer in office, and I think the lack of elected office brings a lot of honesty to some politicians. And Davis certainly comes across, I think, as honest in a lot of what he said. And shockingly, funny. Gray Davis was never known as the funniest, most charismatic politician, but he definitely seems as though he's a guy who is relaxed and refreshed, and you know has gone on with what he does in his life. So what you'll hear here in this podcast are a few of Davis's comments. And speaking of the funny part, let's start right there. The former governor walked into the room and started with a joke.
A couple of people asked me before I came up, why are you going up to speak to the Sacramento Press Corps? So we had to come up with the top 10 reasons why we'd come back to Sacramento. After we got through four reasons, the writers went out on strike. So we have the top four reasons why we came back to Sacramento. Reason number four. Steve Mavigliel promised me after this speech I'd get to hold the Bible as he's sworn in as the chairman of the Natural Food Co-op here in Sacramento. Now, all of you may not be aware of Steve's elevated status, but he won that election with a crushing 18.9% of the vote. Reason number three, Mavigliel told me if I did well here today, he'd give me a break on tofu. Reason number two, I ran into Jerry Brown at a Veterans Day event on Monday, and I think he's looking for a new chief of staff. Reason number one, it just makes sense to talk to the Sacramento Press Corps while they still have some bureaus in Sacramento. I thought that would be the big one. Apparently not.
Okay, so for those of you who are not Capitol insiders, let me explain the former governor's joke a little bit. The person he referred to in the first number four, I think, on the top four list is Steve Mavigliel, who was his press secretary in his administration and now works for Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez. Mavigliel is well known to Capitol reporters, hence the joke, and he was also recently elected to the board of directors of the Sacramento Area Co-op, and so I guess that becomes part of the joke. But again, I do think that Gray Davis comes across as a funnier version of himself than he was in office, and a lighter and more refreshed and relaxed version of himself. Later on, he took questions from the audience, from members of the press and from others, and a whole wide range of topics, and really goes to show that, you know, this was a governor who, you know, whether you liked him or didn't, you know, did think about the issues of the day and was able to kind of talk about the nuances of policy and things like that. So anyway, took a few questions from the press, starting with me.
What do you think about the governor's idea to privatize California Lottery?
I think any time you can enhance, any time you can increase efficiencies, you ought to do so. So if there's a way in which that money that we currently allocate to run the lottery can be result in greater savings to the taxpayers of California, we ought to do it. Now, whether or not that money should be put to finance health care reform is a matter the legislature and the governor need to decide. But clearly, if you can run the lottery more efficiently and save money for the taxpayers, you ought to do it.
Okay.
Governor, hardly a day goes by when somebody doesn't comment about a Governor Schwarzenegger and say, "Why did we even have the recall? He's just like Davis."
Yeah, right. I don't remember too many movies I made. I was in a little sitcom once.
Well,
but
in terms of governing, where do you think there are differences between your approach, your ideology, and that of the current governors? Dan Smith with the Sacramento Bee.
I think the governor is one of the greatest salespersons on the planet Earth. He thinks really big on every issue. I think on balance, he's done a good job. He obviously got off to a rocky start in 2005. I opposed all those initiatives. I think the seminal moment was when he hired Susan Kennedy, another alumni that I'm proud is still doing good work for the people of California. And he's done quite well since then. I mean, you know, I was totally different. I'm not a global movie star. I believed in making progress on a, you know, kind of consistent basis. I used to say incrementalism, in part because I didn't want anyone to get scared. I could see where I wanted to be in 3 or 4 years. And I said, well, let's just go so far down the road in year one, and we'll decide what we'll do. In year one, I fully intended to ask him to go a little farther down the road in year two and so forth. But I wanted to take life in kind of bite-sized chunks. He's much grander and bolder in his vision, and I think it served California well.
Okay. Yeah,
I don't want to totally shortchange myself. I do want to let you know I was in a sitcom called Yes, Dear, and chased Tim Conway out of a skybox at a real-life Laker-Minnesota basketball game. They don't tell you when you're at the game that there's a sitcom being filmed. And in halftime, I'm chasing Tim Conway, who threw a glass of water in my face, out of the box, down the stairs, onto the floor, real-life game, teams are warming up. 2 weeks later, I'm at an event with Governor Dick Machen. We're both doing something for public television. He says, "Governor, I was at that basketball game. I saw you run out on the court. I thought you'd lost your marbles." So, you know, I did. I don't want to say I haven't done at least one, had one adventure in.
Rob Griffith, Capital
World of
Television,
Hollywood.
Capital Television News Service. The Legislative Analyst Office came out today, report projecting like a $10 billion deficit as we're going down the road for next fiscal year. You are essentially fired as governor for fiscal mismanagement. Is there some sense of vindication that these financial problems have gone on, even under a new governor, new administration?
Well, without commenting on the premise of your question, I will say this. Nobody has repealed the business cycle, and every governor who serves more than just a couple years will experience both the good and the bad that comes with our economy. There'll be strong years when revenues are pouring in, and there'll be weak years when we're scratching to find every nickel. The answer, of course, is to adopt a spending limit which stockpiles money in good years that you can draw down in bad years. That's obviously easier said than done. But the only way you avoid this roller coaster ride of, you know, feast or famine is to have some constitutional amendment in place that requires you to put aside 3 or 4% of the budget and you only draw it down under certain circumstances when the economy looks like it's weakening and revenues are falling. Everyone agrees with that in concept, but somehow you can't seem to get that passed. I hope, as a byproduct of dealing with this budget challenge, that the legislature and the governor not only make prudent decisions, and I believe they will, but also tackle this larger question of putting a spending limit before the voters so that we'll have some stability. Otherwise, there's just no governor, governors yet unborn, who'll be governors in the next century, male or female, will be dealing with the same problem we're discussing today.
Governor, is one back here?
Kevin Riggs from KCRA.
Yes.
You seem different than the governor we used to chase around the Capitol. You seem to be enjoying life more. How do you feel you've changed? And do you, in a funny way now, are you relieved or glad that the recall succeeded?
Well, I'm not glad the recall proceeded. But, you know, there is a certain freedom that comes with both age and not being in the bubble. And as I shared with some of you outside, I'm frequently asked to give speeches. And now if some people in the audience don't like my speech, it's no longer my problem. It's their problem. I mean, you know, what do they pay for it? Zip, you know, so... So I just do the best I can to offer advice and to offer guidance when several Democrats ask from time to time. I'm happy to do that. Once in a while, I run into the governor and we have conversations. I'm happy to share advice with he or his team because I believe in this state. It was great to me. I loved every moment I was governor. I'm proud of what we were able to accomplish. And I believe life is like a relay race. When you have the baton, you run as hard and fast as you can. And you hope the next guy doesn't run in a different direction. And I'm very pleased the governor has, by and large, not run in a different direction and has supported some causes I feel deeply about, a couple of which I discussed in my formal remarks. There's an awful lot to be said about not being in the bubble. In the bubble, you know, you're just, your world is AIDS and speeches, and you're not living a real life, and it's very hard to understand how real people feel about things. I'll just share one thing with you, which I know will go over like a lead balloon, but I've been out of office 4 years now. I have yet to find a single person, from a busboy to a janitor to a middle manager to a partner in a law firm to a CEO, that wants to give Sacramento more of their disposable income. Not one human being. Now, there's a few sort of aging liberals in their 80s that are happy to write larger checks, and I think we should encourage that and send them thank you notes. But when you're in Sacramento, all the consultants tell you, oh, yeah, people want to pay more money. But that's because they're in the bubble, and they're not leading, you know, a real life.
Bob Schmidt, I'm streaming with the campus.
Robert, how are you? The San Jose Mercury. God bless you.
Well, right now I'm streaming with the Campus Commons Homeowners Association newsletter.
And wait a minute.
Once a reporter, always a reporter.
Wait a minute. You may not know 6 degrees of separation. When I worked for Jerry Brown, I was a homeowner in Campus Commons. All right.
Was that your house? My question is, if Jerry Brown...
My wife looked in the icebox one day, and there was one can of Budweiser and some cold pizza, and said, this has got to change.
If Jerry Brown runs for governor, would you campaign for him?
You know, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here. I said outside, Jerry Brown will be a favorite in any race he enters. The name Edmund G. Brown, Jr. has never lost in a Democratic primary. Edmund G. Brown has never lost in a primary, nor has Edmund G. Brown, Jr., nor has Kathleen Brown, who beat a sitting attorney general and an insurance commissioner, John Vandekamp and John Garamendi. So that's a very powerful name in Democratic politics. We'll just wait to see if he runs before I answer the second part of your question.
And, of course, that last question is an interesting one. Will Jerry Brown, the former two-term governor, former California Secretary of State, former mayor of Oakland, former presidential candidate, will he, in fact, throw his hat back into the ring to be governor in 2010? For those of you who don't know, the reason Jerry Brown could be governor again, and most two-term governors cannot, is that Brown served before that particular term limit on governors was in place, in which case he is not ineligible to be governor, as Gray Davis would be or Arnold Schwarzenegger would be. So that's why Jerry Brown could come back. Of course, it's a big topic of speculation, and Davis, you know, carefully dodged that one, but I think, you know, even probably the Attorney General Jerry Brown doesn't quite know yet, or if he does, he hasn't told a whole lot of people for sure that he would run in 2010 in a Democratic primary. Anyway, again, as I said, Davis was, dare I say, you know, funny, and also just very, it seemed, you know, honest about what was going on. There were about a dozen former members of his administration in the audience who came out to see the ex-governor speak. And one of the things that I think you heard in that discussion there, the Q&A, is that Davis has these ideas about state spending, which clearly was on everybody's mind because the legislative analyst Elizabeth Hill had come out on Wednesday with this fairly dire assessment of the state's finances, that we're $2 billion in the hole in the current fiscal year, and she projects another $8 billion in the fiscal year to come. So a $10 billion worth of red ink that has to be resolved. You know, Davis talked a little bit, as you heard him, about a spending limit. And it's not quite certain exactly what he meant, because he talked about a spending limit, but then he also said that the state should have some reserve money that have to be put away every year. Well, as you might know, there was a reserve measure on the ballot that we have to put money away for a rainy day. It was called Proposition 58 in 2004, and it passed, and so the state does put money into that reserve. Of course, we've blown through that reserve, as we found this Wednesday, in accumulating deficit and red ink. But also, you know, the governor talked about, Governor Davis there talked about a spending limit of some sort. And yet the only spending limit that's been on the ballot in recent times, which have changed how things happen with the budget, was Proposition 76 in 2005, one of the governor's special election measures, Governor Schwarzenegger's measures, and was widely criticized by Democrats and those on the left. Governor Davis actually himself was opposed to Proposition 76. So it'd be interesting to see exactly what kind of spending limit formula he thinks would work. And again, he did mix the term spending limit with putting money away for a rainy day. But remains to be seen. There could be some ideas and policy there that certainly should come forward. And one more cut here from Governor Davis at the Sacramento Press Club I thought was interesting, again, just in terms of its honesty. And it begins where he's talking about probably the biggest hot-button issue of the 2003 recall, the increase in the car tax, the vehicle license fee, that went up under Davis there at the very end, and Arnold Schwarzenegger used successfully to oust Davis as governor and replace him as governor. And again, I thought Davis had some very honest comments about that.
We did raise the car tax in my last year. We'd reduced it very substantially for the first 4 years, and I thought people would understand. We'd given them back about $12 billion, and we're asking back for $4 billion. They said, hey, you gave that $12 billion back to us. That was not our choice. That was your choice. You gave it to us. That's ours. We're not giving it back. So it's difficult to make choices when the economy turns. And if we don't put in place some structural change, you'll be asking the same question of future governors once the economy turns. Nobody likes to actually have to reduce what someone like education or healthcare or the environment gets from the budget. And obviously people don't want not only what they got last year, but, you know, 5 or 6% on top of that. But if you have in place a system that acknowledges the volatility of the economy, that provides the revenues that finance these lack of a better word, institutions, at least everyone will understand that no one can guarantee the future. No one knows precisely what next year will bring. And it's really not realistic for groups to say, well, we have our money locked in no matter what happens. You can't have things locked in. You can be locked in as a certain percentage, but you still ride the tiger. In good years, you'll do well, and in bad years, you won't do as well. And I think it's important for people to accept that reality rather than figuring out there's some way they can insulate themselves from the ups and downs of the economy. All of us are not insulated from it, and there's really no way to believe that should be done at the state level. The federal government, they have a printing press. That's a whole different deal. But the state level, where you have to try and make ends meet, you just can't do that.
And again, there at the end, you hear former Governor Davis talking about his ideas of a constitutional amendment of some sort that would change the state budgeting process, and remains to be seen, you know, whether compromise could actually come on that, given Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservatives and others have very different opinions on exactly how that budget process should work. But again, that was former Governor Gray Davis speaking to the Sacramento Press Club this past week on Wednesday, and an interesting discussion and a good turnout for the former governor. He had about 100 folks in the audience there listening to his remarks. Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Capital Notes podcast. Next week, we'll be back to the Journalist Roundtable. I'm John Myers from KQED and the California Report. We'll see you next time.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.